You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This DIY feature is proudly sponsored by Paintsmiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge with...
I visit Paintsmiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paintsmiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge with pleasure. Paintsmiths Long Beach. Bululo Drive, Sunnydale.
It's 10:30 and time for the DIY feature with Jeannie Sue on the Brunson. I will be chatting to Patrick Condoran from Patrick Condoran Plumbing CC. Good morning, Patrick, and welcome to Zone Radio.
Good morning, Sue. Thanks very much for having me.
Yes, so our topic this morning is all about tips regarding plumbing.
There we go. Exactly.
So, Patrick, do you want to, and you are obviously a valley boy.
Yes, well, born and partially raised in the valley. Started off my schooling here. Then we moved to the Transkei in the Eastern Cape for about 10-odd years, and then got my national service call up to the Navy when was that, 1989, and then basically remained in the Fishhook area ever since. Yeah.
So you're definitely a valley boy.
There we go.
So, Patrick, how did you get started?
Well, as I've mentioned in the past to a couple of mates and acquaintances, you know, back in the day, I was one of those individuals who had no real idea what they wanted to do after school. And after the Navy, I was none the wiser as well, and ended up with the Department of Manpower. They used to offer bursaries back in the day, and they sat us all down for aptitude testing. And after a week or two, they called us up and said, look, you know, if you want to do X, Y, Z, we'll sponsor you. And in my case, they said, well, we think you'll make a mighty fine plumber, which I still find amusing to this day. Anyway, so I said, not a problem. I'm not doing anything else with my time. And they sent us off to Westlake College for a year. And then after that, a one-year apprenticeship. My last position, which was with one of the companies in the area, which is no more False Bay Plumbing. And then after that, trade test, and then opened the business. And then that was about 29 years ago.
That's a long time.
Yeah, yes. It's quite a while. So, time flies. Right.
So now our topic this morning is about tips. Now,
yes.
You know, everyone needs a plumber. Yeah, I don't think there is a household that does not need a plumber.
Of course.
And you know that.
Sure.
But now how does one go about kind of preventing it to get that bad that you need? I mean, we will still call you out because leaking taps is a menace. And, I mean, we surely don't know how to fix it. But if you can do a step-by-step for us, you know, how can one prevent a blocked drain, a leaking tap? And obviously, sometimes we just think, oh, okay, we're hoping that it will go away. No, when it won't.
Yeah. Look, when it comes to things like blockages, I mean, I'm not going to tell you some of the stuff we found down drains.
Oh, no, you must. It's actually, this is at the end, when we get to the end.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if people just gave it a little bit of thought, they wouldn't put some of the things down the drain that they do. You know, you don't want to put too much cooking oil and stuff like that down there. So a lot of it is basic common sense.
But it happens.
It does happen, yes. Yeah, absolutely, of course. But probably one of the sort of best tips we give people, especially your sort of elderly widowed people, is find your water mains isolation valve and you know where it is and test it, because that's probably your biggest crisis when at 3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden there's a burst pipe in your roof space. And as I say, a lot of the folks in the valley are elderly and they have absolutely no idea where to turn their water off, what to do, and all of a sudden it's a crisis. You know, we've never put ourselves out there as a 24/7 company, so we don't offer that kind of service. But where we come across a situation where we're at a client's house and their mains isolation valve next to the meter is sort of a foot underground and covered with sort of spiders and earth and all the rest, what we'll do is always encourage them to allow us to bring that tap to the surface, and then we test it and make sure that they can test it themselves and it's functional. So that in a crisis situation, they actually can just turn the water off, tomorrow morning call the plumber type of thing.
So, Patrick, yeah. That must happen in many of these old houses, many.
It does. And your large properties, like your big properties out in Nootik, for example, where people will say, well, they say, okay, fine, I'll turn it off. They say, where's the isolation valve?
Yes.
And I'll say, well, it's next to the meter. They say, oh, but where's my meter? So people they don't really know.
Yeah. Most of our meters are outside.
Yeah.
And that's where ours are. It's
correct.
Outside. We also had a big problem.
Yes.
But we couldn't switch it off.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's a pipe next to the meter, but we could not switch it off. It was so damaged because it's in the ground.
Yeah, exactly right, Jo. And talking about the meters, you know, we always encourage folks to read their meters on a regular basis. And with a lot of your modern-day meters, for example, you've got a little dial that spins around. It's very easy to see if a tap is dripping or a geyser valve is running excessively.
So what do we do in that case?
Well, if you see the little dial turning and clearly there's nothing's being used inside, it's a very obvious sign that you do have a leak.
So first of all, we've got to switch everything off. So we switch everything off and then go down. And if it's spinning...
If you can turn the isolation valve off, then do so. And again, call your local plumber. Unless, of course, you get a very handy individual at the house who's sort of, you know, as I say, good with their hands and whatnot, they might be able to track it and find it themselves, you know.
So we need to call. We would need to call, especially. Let's call for the pensioners. Pensioners Plus and all of many of us.
Correct.
So we would need to call you out, Patrick, to come and come and sort of help with that.
Yeah.
So right now the leak, say at home, your kitchen taps are leaking and there's a drip, drip, drip.
Yes.
And the bathroom tap, and that happens.
Yes.
It happens.
Yeah.
What does one do before we have to call you out? How could we prevent that?
You're not really going to be able to prevent a tap from dripping because most of the time, I mean, like now, for example, in Nelson Road, council is busy with a massive big burst water mains pipe there. And inevitably, once they've fixed the burst pipe and they've turned the water back on, there's quite a bit of sand and muck that comes through the system. And it usually ends up clogging up things like geyser valves and getting under tap washers and whatnot. So it's not something really that the homeowner can avoid. As far as taps go, I mean, try not to over-tighten them. Most modern-day taps, you only need two fingers just to turn them off.
Just
very gently. And if the little spout is still dripping a little bit, don't worry. Come back 5 minutes later, inevitably it will have stopped dripping. It's just residual water that's inside the spout.
Now, if it doesn't stop dripping?
Well, again, it
depends. Do you need to have to replace that whole
tap? No, just usually just the tap washer, or if it's a single-lever mixer, than what we call the cartridge of the mixer. But, you know, to answer your question, it all comes down to the level of competency of the homeowner. You know, some people are extremely practical and they know how to change tap washers and whatnot themselves.
Yes.
But if you are unsure, don't take a chance because, you know, you're going to end up flooding your house and then you'll have to tell a long sad story to your insurance company as to why you need new carpets and whatnot.
Yeah. And sometimes do they pay out if it's negligence? Do they pay out? Because obviously they do their homework, don't they?
Yeah, they'll want a full report, a damage report from a registered plumber, obviously.
Yes.
You know, typically they're going to pay for things like, well, put it this way, there's hardly a day that goes by that we don't replace burst geysers for our clients.
I want to, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, those are all legitimate insurance claims. Yeah. Burst water mains, pipes, legitimate claims, no problem at all.
Let's talk about that. I know geysers, I've known my own daughter recently and that was the middle of the night, like you said, but luckily that they knew where the switch off was and they could do it, but they phoned a plumber during the night and they told them what to do.
Yes.
So How do you know that your geyser is going to burst?
So if a geyser is correctly installed, you know, there's a very specific code. It's called SANS 10254. Now, that's the legal installation code for a high-pressure geyser in the country. And if your geyser is installed per this SANS 10254, you're going to have three overflow pipes leading to the exterior of the roof space. The one is for the pressure-reducing valve. It's the smallest overflow, usually about 15 millimeters in diameter, and that pipe will drip from time to time with what we call routine expansion relief. So you've had a bath, you've had a shower, you've used an amount of hot water.
Yes.
Obviously, the thermostat in the geyser will pick up that the temperature has dropped in the geyser, turns on the element, starts heating, and with that heating process, you have expansion. So it will drip from time to time. Not a problem. Just mustn't drip 24/7. Then the next pipe is about a 22 millimeter copper overflow pipe attached to the emergency safety valve, well, when that one opens up, it usually sounds like a Boeing is warming up in your space, makes a hell of a racket and expels a heck of a lot of usually scalding hot water. And then if your geyser has burst, the biggest of the overflows is attached to what they call the drip tray that the geyser sits in. And when we talk about a burst geyser, you know, for insurance purposes, it's classified as a burst geyser. And it sounds quite dramatic, but more often than not, that larger of the three overflow pipes will just start dripping. And that's your telltale sign. So awareness is half the battle won.
Yeah. So we need to listen to those, because the pipes obviously is placed somewhere, because it's got to go.
They've got to be visible. So typically under the eaves, you should, in your average household, you would see these three overflow pipes sitting there, and you'll want to keep an eye on them from time to time.
So now we must look out for the different drips.
Different drips from different size pipes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
well, that's important, because we just don't know. And
you
We wouldn't know, especially, and we do. We've got old houses,
yes.
And we've also got, I don't want to mention the old people, but we do have people in their 70 pluses.
Senior people in senior houses.
Senior houses,
yeah,
yes.
There we go. Yeah,
and I mean, most of those houses were built when, and then to replace, do you advise on replacing pipes and all that type of thing?
So, you know, back in the day, a lot of plumbers used to use this terrible orange plastic, what's called polycopper water mains piping, which ironically has been outlawed now, and you're no longer allowed to use it, but you can still go to your local hardware store and buy the stuff. So that's a bit of a misnomer. But yes, it's got a limited lifespan, and it does start failing after a while. And then, yes, we recommend having it replaced with a decent quality multi-layer composite pipe or copper piping.
Yes. Yeah. So we started off with block drains, and you said to be careful what you throw down. Now, I do know about oil.
Yes.
I mean, I think all of us, it doesn't matter how old we are, we do know, don't throw oil down.
Yes.
But it does happen.
Yeah.
There might be a little bit left in that. And that is at the start of serious problems, but it's not just oil. What else goes down there that shouldn't? And different soaps?
Soaps aren't too much of a problem, but things like certain contraceptives, sanitary products, things like that, you know, you might want to think twice before flushing those down the loo, because you might think you're getting rid of the evidence, but it tends to linger.
Yes, and cause major issues.
Exactly,
Because, I mean, and that is very true, because everywhere you go, there's always signs. Please do not throw that in the...
Yeah.
Please do not.
Exactly, right.
But at home, it's not... You see, this is where the young ladies and the gents and all that, they need to learn that. Don't throw it in.
Sure.
But it does happen.
But also more especially, a lot of houses still have things like septic tanks. I'm talking about areas like sort of Scarborough, Misty Cliffs, certainly... number of our clients in Comerkey, Nurtuk, and particularly with septic tanks, you want to be very, very careful what you allow into that septic tank. So, you know, if it's not toilet paper or human waste, it mustn't go down the toilet, because it wreaks havoc with the bacteria inside the tanks.
And they're aware of that.
Very aware, yeah.
What other tips could there be for us to prevent...
Well, blockages, I think we've sort of covered.
Yes, we have.
Water mains, we've covered. You're going to keep an eye on that water meter, keep an eye on your overflow pipes and things like that.
So how often do you think that we should go and check that kind of thing, switch off everything and go and check to see?
Well, if everything's nice, no, I'm not saying...
Because the water has gone up, and people, you know, when I went to the department, and I had so many... people, you know, the clients that were there, customers that were there asking questions about what we're talking about.
Looking for rebates, for example, high water bills.
Yeah, what's going on.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to burst water mains, pipes and whatnot, again, as long as the client is using a plumber who is licensed to operate within the greater city of Cape Town area, that plumber will obviously find and fix the burst pipe. They'll obviously give their clients an invoice, but also what they should give their client is a rebate request letter, and there are certain forms that you can download from the City of Cape Town's website.
That they fill in.
All in a bid to get a rebate on your water account, and 10-1, more often than not, our clients do get those rebates.
Yeah. Do they come and do their homework as well, or do they take the word of you?
No, they typically take the word of the plumber and the homeowner. When it comes to burst water mains and things like that, again, it's a legitimate insurance claim and you can get your rebate from the City of Cape Town. Yes. But you know, we always take photographic evidence, you know, and keep it on file. So if anybody calls for it, it is available. Yes.
Yeah, Patrick, yeah. Do you charge call-out fees?
Yes, we do.
Do you?
There's a call. Typically, most plumbers will charge a call-out fee and then, of course, an hourly operational rate.
From there. Then you also, I do believe you've got to give a CoC certificate now as well.
Yeah, when it comes to particularly things like geyser replacements, the insurance companies will always request a certificate of compliance on completion. Right.
And when you replace a geyser, because, I mean, many of us don't know, do you advise the client what geyser you're replacing with, because there's so many on the market, and which is a suitable one, it's actually what's availability as well.
Yeah. You're quite right, Sue. I mean, there's quite a lot of different types of what makes and models on the market. Look, invariably, most people just replace like for like. The insurance companies sometimes squeal a little bit when you quote them a large amount of money, but it's for a copper geyser. Then we've got to motivate that and say, well, the client has a copper geyser, which in my opinion is the finest geyser on the market.
Yes.
But again, it comes at a price tag. Some folks can afford it, and unfortunately some can't.
I didn't know that they were still using copper, because everything's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, I know. copper geysers are fantastic. They really are. And the difference also is with the copper geyser, there's little to no maintenance, short of maybe replacing the odd element or thermostat. With your steel geysers, it has what's called a sacrificial anode, which is sort of an aluminium rod inside the geyser, which has got to be changed every 2 years. That's effectively your anti-corrosion device.
Yes.
And surprisingly, few plumbers mention this to clients.
I don't know why,
but they don't. And when we mention it to clients, they sort of say, well, we've never heard of this before.
That's why I've actually asked you to mention it, because I think it's important. We trust the plumber.
Yeah.
We definitely do trust the plumber.
Sure.
You know, but it's also nice to know. And when someone, you know, does a drip tray always come? Is it a drip tray to every geyser?
Every geyser inside a roof space, for example, or anywhere where that, if that geyser potentially bursts, can it cause water damage to the property?
Yes.
By law, you have to have the drip tray underneath it.
Because I believe there's some, and I know some, that there wasn't a drip tray.
Yeah, well again, back in the day, you know, I don't know, a drip tray was sort of an optional extra.
Okay.
And this code that I spoke about, your SANS 10254, it hasn't been around forever. It used to be called the SABS. What is it? SABS 0254. And now you no longer have SABS. Now it's called SANS, South African National Standards 10254.
Because before then, that's why when you had a burst, it was very bad.
Correct, yeah.
Because, I mean, the drip tray is kind of a warning as well, doesn't it? Because it holds before.
No, it's your parachute. It's your failsafe.
Yeah.
But also, it's not only that when it comes to compliance. I mean, if you want to sell your house, for example, you've obviously got to get your electrical, you've got to get your beetle, gas if you have it. And, of course, now your plumbing COC.
Yes. And that's new.
Before the property can change hands. And and on that plumbing COC, one of the first things is, of course, the geyser. So just get it done right. Yeah. Get it done properly.
So you say, well, we all know the geyser is the most important because we use it. I mean, we use water for everything.
Totally.
So what else haven't we covered for in the tip was? So we've done meter.
Yeah, we've done meter, we've done geyser. Yeah. You know, other than that, also, I mean, 90% of your modern-day toilets these days have like an internal overflow. So if you lift up the seat to use the loo, and you can see water dribbling into the back of the bowl. You know, again, it's a telltale sign, so just get it sorted out.
Especially like a run-in. That's something you can talk about. Yeah. A run-in, you flush, it just keeps running, and you can't stop.
And it just keeps dribbling.
Yes.
So
what does one do there?
Well,
call Patrick.
You're welcome to call us anytime, of course. but again, a lot of your it's usually the flush mechanism that has a little bit of grit or dirt underneath the what we call the diaphragm washer. That's the most common cause, or else the inlet valve for the toilet system has failed and it's not shutting off. The system components haven't been correctly sort of calibrated. If they are correctly calibrated and the little inlet valve fails, water will rise to a certain point and then it'll disappear down the internal overflow and dribble into the bowl.
Okay.
As opposed to back in the day where it would dribble into the side alleyway through the overflow.
And cause problems.
Yeah, so again, if you're practically minded, you might strip the little flush mechanism down. You might decide to change the actual diaphragm washer if it's looking a little bit perished. Yeah.
So you don't need to buy the whole units inside the toilet, the system, whatever you call that?
You don't necessarily have to buy all the components, but it depends on the make and the model and the design of the toilet cistern.
Especially how old it is, it might not have the parts.
Yeah, a lot of your slightly more modern-day toilet cisterns are designed to work on a full or a half flush. You know, it's typically a 3 or 6 liter flush. And those do tend to sort of confound some of the most practical people. Yes, so, you know, if it's above and beyond, again, just call your local registered plumber.
Yeah. I've known people, they've just switched it off. I mean, they need the toilet to switch it back on. Yeah. And that's what they've done.
Well, I suppose if time's a little bit tough.
So I do know because I mean it's a menace listening to, because then obviously when you flush the toilet handle, the flush handle, it doesn't come up because the water's running, so it doesn't sort of, you know what I mean, it just kind of stays there, so they just switch off.
The flush handle and arm is effectively actuates the flush mechanism, lifts it up so water can pass from the cistern into the bowl. Yes.
How often should one service this kind of thing?
Only really if they give problems. Okay. Again, awareness is where it's at.
Yes, I believe
if you're aware
that.
Of these things, I mean, you know, our approach has always been typically conservative. You know, if something really needs to be replaced, then we'll replace it.
Yeah.
If not, clean it out, service it nicely, put it back together, and off you go.
And let the client know.
Yeah,
but
totally.
You know, Patrick, there are many single ladies. Well, there's many single gents as well. Some of them are hands-on, some aren't.
Yeah.
And they need, you know, we need this advice, because we wouldn't, I mean, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not one that would switch off the tap, I'd probably call you.
Yes,
still, if you don't have the funds.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's not uncommon for usually, again, a senior citizen to come along and ring my bell at the office, and there he stands, and he's got a certain component, whether it's a tap cartridge or it's a toilet cistern, whatever the case might be, and he's standing there with this thing in his hands, and it's in pieces, and he says, "Now, what do I do now?" And you know, naturally, I want to say to the guy, look, you know, give me your address and we'll come and sort it out. But clearly, he's tried to do it himself because maybe he's exactly, and you've got to respect that. So,
And I love the way you think. I bet you helped him.
Totally. Yeah. Not him, them. Many over the years, you know, and they most grateful. They say, "Oh, you know, how much do I owe you?" It's really a pleasure. Yeah. You know, we're grateful for the level of sort of commitment we have from our clients as well.
And the trust they have in you as
well. Absolutely. I mean, and you never want to abuse that.
Yeah. So. Because I don't think everyone can just rock up at any plumbers and say with their goods and say, "Please help." And there you are. So you stand above everybody.
I don't know, Sue. I'm pretty sure most people would help, you know.
Yeah. You know, but lots of people are busy, you know. So, Patrick, before we say goodbye, is there anything else you want to share with us? And then you must please give out your contact number.
I think we've covered pretty much everything, Sue. We really have. As far as getting hold of us goes, you could Google Patrick Plummer Fishhook and you'll find us. Otherwise, again, we are Cape Town and Fishhook based, so 021 is quite straightforward. Typically 782 for the Fishhook area and then 4411. So 782-4411, and you'll always get hold of us on that number. During normal working hours, please.
Yes. Take note, Patrick has made that very clear. Normal hours. Switch off everything and phone him in the morning.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Patrick, as well, before you go, so do you don't just do the valley. You do the surrounds as well?
Yeah, we do. We have a strong sort of footprint in the deep south, but we cover the whole of the southern suburbs, right up to areas like, you know, Rondebosch, Observatory, Woodstock. We have clients who will call us from
all over.
Camps Bay, and then we've got to get our passport ready. And city centre, all over the show.
That's awesome to know.
Pretty much southern suburbs, that's us.
So well done. So, Patrick, thank you for coming in and sharing your knowledge.
Thank you for having me.
And expertise with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you go and have a licker day.
All good. Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.
That DIY feature was brought to you by Paintsmiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. I visit Paintsmiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paintsmiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. Paintsmiths Long Beach, Bulalo Drive, Sunnydale.